So, I grade all the tests. I have to still upload the grades to the website with the anonymous codes and all that. When I do that, which I can do later today, I will also compute an estimated grade based on the syllabus weighting, which says 19% homeworks based on your median homework grade, and then 81% is based on tests, so including the final exam. So I will estimate the test part by the average of your two exam grades so far. So you'll get some kind of overall grade estimate once I post it later today. Yes?
The website. I seem to have trouble with the website because I try to download the pictures or the notes, and I try to open them up in PDF, but they come out undecoded, or that says that there's an error downloading them.
Okay, yes. That too.
They're somehow, when they're being decoded or moved around, files being moved around, it becomes corrupted. I don't know. I can't.
Is it?
Open.
Is it just a recent board photo? Or all of them?
But now all of them, because I used to have...
The older ones are still okay?
Not anymore. I can't access the older ones.
That sounds like a permissions problem.
Yeah.
Like somehow the permissions got changed. So...
not me. No, it just says error. Can't open it because it was incorrectly decoded from email and such. Same thing when we get them from email. I haven't been able to do that.
Well, I'm not sure what to tell you. I mean, I'm trying to open them right now, and it looks pretty good. Hang on, I mean... I'm using the local version here, but I can. Here, I can, this is this. Okay.
Do you open it in Firefox or Chrome?
This is Firefox. Okay, so it's the same URL I give you all. Okay, so let's go to board photos, most recent. Seems to work for me. I'm not sure what's going wrong for you.
Could not open zip file because it is either not the ported file type or because the files are damaged.
It sounds like the version, whatever system you're running, it's not supporting this kind of zip file. So that it's. Yeah. I mean, there's.
I'll see if I can update my Adobe, but I've been giving you that problem for a while.
Yeah, it shouldn't have anything to do with Adobe because that's for PDFs, and these are the board photos are always zip files.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I make something a PDF. So it shouldn't have anything to do with Adobe.
Lecture audio is fine. I can access the audio.
So it's not a permissions problem. It sounds like it's a problem of the zip archive format and your device.
I'll see about changing. I might be able to create an alternative.
I mean, in principle, they don't have to be in zip archives. I put them in zip archives because it's easier to download them all at once. But in principle, I could just display the images right in the browser. All right. So I could try to set up, a more simpler version, so to speak. So I'll have to get back to you on that one.
I'm not sure what the problem is on your end, but I might be able to at least create a second version on my end that works for you. Other questions? Yes.
For the grading, I guess it would get a B minus. What is that in percentage forms?
I don't compute a percent. I compute a GPA. So a B minus in terms of GPA would be a 3.3. B plus is 3.3. It's like A is 4, A minus is 3.7, B plus is 3.3, B is 3, B minus is 2.7, C plus is 2.3, C is 2, and so on. So I convert the plus minus letter grades into GPAs, and then I compute, say, a median. If it's for homework scores, for tests, I take the average. And then I round it back to the nearest plus minus letter grade. Sometimes the rounding is usually slightly in your favor, but it's to go back to a letter grade, I have to do some kind of rounding. It's something like I subtract 0.1 and then round up. Since the increments are always of size 0.3 or 0.4, that's usually rounding in your favor more often than not. I have a little Python program that I can show you sometime if you want to see exactly how it's done. But yeah, that's what it says in the syllabus. I convert the letter grades to GPA scores. Other questions?
The homework will be due Thursday.
I got the syllabus right here, don't I? The homework is due next Tuesday, right? April 19th. There's three ways. One way is you come to my office. Second way, I have a mailbox in the same floor as my office, same building. It's 312 instead of 321. Third way, you take pictures of it and email it to me.
Through Blackboard or through the TAMU email?
I think you can use Blackboard to send me an email, but I guess I think it's probably simpler if you just use the TAMU email. I don't know if it makes a difference. So far, no one's actually used Blackboard to send me an email. I turned off the Blackboard message thing because I didn't want to have to check a separate message thing. But you can use Blackboard to send me an email. That's my understanding.
That does raise another question.
I'm listening.
I sent an email, a reply email from one of your previous messages, and it denied my request. It said I'm not on the list.
Is it a version error?
Like you sent me something from Blackboard.
No, from email, desk email.
And you're not on. I don't know why it would say that.
Not on the list.
Well, send me an email from your Google account or your Yahoo account or whatever. I don't care. Okay. No, I don't have anything like that. I get all sorts of unsolicited email. If I could block it, I would. OIT controls that sort of thing. I don't have my own separate spam filter or anything like that. I can give their spam filter a little bit of training every once in a while, but all it really does is whitelist a few emails that aren't spam. I still get a ton of spam, all sorts of invitations to random conferences of questionable reputation. People have it all together and then just a few mistakes, and some people there's several different problems going on. But it's not the same for everybody. You know, there are some people, you know, that got like two A's and an F, you know, on the three over the three questions, right? So there's different strengths and weaknesses. The thing that surprised me a lot, with number one, you know, there were just a lot of people that got the formula wrong. I was surprised by this. Maybe you need to review how compound interest works, right? Compound interest, exponential growth, right? All that stuff. That goes all the way back to Business Math 1. That goes. I mean, of course, a lot of people, I guess I should have seen this coming. I talk about U substitution and I think UDV from integration by parts, right? So those are not the same thing. For some of you, this is preaching to the choir. You got this question right, so you know this. A lot of people got it right. A lot of people got it wrong. That's the case of all the questions, I think. And I guess with numbers 2 and 3, really, there's just a lot of algebra mistakes, right? That goes, of course, that goes back to a course that's a prerequisite for Business Math 1, right? College algebra. And all this prerequisite knowledge, some of it you can get away with forgetting, but if you get too much of it, there's problems. What can I do for you? What's this? There are websites out there that can give you lots of, review sheets for this kind of stuff, I mean, if you still have your old textbooks, of course, you can always review those too. I mean, there's a chapter, like in the Business Math 1 textbook, I think it's the Financial Mathematics chapter. I guess if I was going to recommend you, like, where would you go for like an algebra review sheet? You know,
I think this is one of the more well-known places to get that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there are many other resources that will be happy to review algebra for you, because it's a more commonly commonly taken math course, right? There's more people that take college algebra than people that take an advanced course like this, which is a calculus course. So there's tons of resources. Of course, actually, this website has some stuff on calculus too. Okay. So, with that said, why don't we just take a little break, and you can come and get your tests and the solutions. I have really old assignments and tests, if you're still missing those as well. There's two sheets for the solutions. Sorted by last name, grades are on the back of the test. That is a week from today. Okay. So, we are taking a break from integration now. We're going back to derivatives. Okay. So the twist is we're going to be thinking a little more carefully about what happens when there are multiple input variables. Right. So we've talked about this somewhat implicitly already. So, for example, if you have V equals volume of a box, right? And it's length times width times height. So you can think of this as V is the output, and you can think of it as three inputs. Now, in general, when you have lots of different inputs, it can be hard to understand how they affect the output corporately. Trick is to focus on one variable, one input at a time. So, in this context here, if I have these three inputs and the one output, then we introduce now partial derivatives. So this is a new symbol, and I don't know the exact history of where it came from. It's not from any foreign alphabet or anything. It's just a symbol you only see in math. And the way you read it is partial V.
Basic. Partial D, partial L.
And what is it supposed to look like?
It looks like that. Kind of like a backwards six, but with a little bit more on the top. So the idea of a partial derivative is you want to measure a rate of change. You want to ask, if I change the input by a small amount, how much will I change the output? But you want to simplify things. So you just want to look at one input at a time. So you say, assume the other inputs are not changing. Then if I change, we'll say the input L, right? How much does the volume change? Right? And the way that question is answered is in terms of a ratio. Right? So let's put some numbers on this. I'm going to figure this out. But the key here is I don't have to do a triple product rule here because I'm holding W and H constant. So it's actually easier than it looks. Since I'm holding W and H constant here, I'm only thinking about what happens if I change L. These are just constant multiples of L, so I can factor them out. And then the DLs cancel, I just get WH, which would be 20, 4 times 5. What does this mean? We need to give it some kind of interpretation. That board's busy. Interpretation is just think of it in terms of a DVDL, right? DV is a little change in V, DL is a little change in L. The DV is an approximate change because it's a differential, but the DL, although it's a differential, is exact because we think of L as the input, right? So if we change L by a small amount, DL, then V changes by approximately DV equals 20 times DL. So if you increase the length by 0.1, then you increase the volume by 2.
Why did I write 62?
You multiplying it by 20?
Multiplying what by 20?
L.
Yeah, 3 times 20 is 60. And then, so that's the 60. And where did the 2 come from?
The 0.1.
Yeah, 20 times the 0.1. Yeah.
In this case, actually, the if you look closely, the approximation is actually perfect, because 20 times 3.1 is exactly 62. Okay. It doesn't happen in general, so give an example of that. I've got to pick something. Let me bring this whiteboard down.
Did they only apply to men? That only fit to men?
Well, yeah, we can do the other three. Okay.
So it would be the same kind of argument, right? So we want the partial derivative with respect to width. Now we're treating L and H, the other inputs, as constant. Okay, so if you treat L and H as constants, then you've got your constant multiple rule, so you can factor them out of that differential in the numerator. And the DWs cancel, just like the DLs cancel there, so you get L times H, which for us is 15. So if, W changes to 4.1, say, then B changes to 61.5. B starts out at 60, 3 times 4 times 5. 0.1 increase in W times a 15, 1.5 increase in V. Here's partial V, partial H. Same deal, just now we're holding L and W constant. So pull out the constant multiple from that differential in the numerator. Okay. Now we have DHs that cancel, so we get L times W, which is 12. And you can give it an interpretation. So if the height increases to, say, 5.1, then the volume will increase from 60 to 60 plus that 0.1 increase times 12. Now I should probably take some pictures.
questions or comments about this?
Try with a slightly more complicated formula. Okay, so now I have a function, let's say it has three variables. So, I want to know partial derivatives of this function. So to do this, we need to remember a few things. We need to remember the sum rule, the constant multiple rule, the power rule, and we need to remember to hold certain variables constant so that we'll actually have constant multiples and not variable multiples. Like the volume of the box, it looks like you have to use the product rule all over the place. But you're holding other variables constant, so you actually don't have to use the product rule at all in this example. So what would be partial f partial x?
Differential and then break it up into differential of that first part x to the third, y to the second, z to the negative 1 plus differential.
Yes.
So on and so forth.
Okay. I'll just put the 1 over dx in the front and then, yeah. Okay, we've got all these differentials. And yeah, using the sum rule, we can break it up. Yeah. So that all those differentials divided by the dx, right? And the key is we're treating y and z as constants. Okay. So we're only thinking about what happens when we change x and leave everything else alone. Okay. So what do I do next? What's the next rule I need?
And then you're going to use the, I would say the product rule for each individual piece?
Well, the special case of the product rule, the constant multiple rule, which is, right. If you have a product rule where one of the factors is a constant, like u times v, and v is a constant, then when you look at the formula you get, the u dv plus v du, if v is constant, dv is zero, right? So you get a simpler formula, right? That's why I think it's worth having it as a separate case, the constant multiple rule. So in this case, all the y and z stuff, constants. So you can just factor all that stuff out. Look at this one, though. It's all constant. And it's just a zero. We're holding y and z are held constant here, so y times z squared times negative 1, that's all constant.
constant multiple rule and just the constant rule right here. And you're not quite done, right? There's still one interesting thing to do, which is to use the power rule. Maybe I'll just annotate it a little bit so we can see it. Okay. This is, remember the power rule, so 3 times x, right? You have a copy of the power as a now a constant multiple, and then you decrement the power, right? The power drops by 1. And that dx is going to get canceled with that dx. And then here you have 2x to the 2 minus 1 dx. Of course, people usually don't write x to the 2 minus 1 because x to the 1 is just x. So that's a 2x dx. The dx is going to get canceled. Here we have negative 2 times x to the negative 2 minus 1 dx. Another dx that will get canceled. So if you put it all together, you will have we'll have from this term, we will have 3x squared, and then we'll have the y and z stuff. That was just a constant multiple. Here we'll have 2xy. I don't need to write the 0 again. And then we'll have negative 2 times x to the negative 3. So that's the x partial derivative. It's a complicated function, but I made it complicated so you could see several different rules in play. Any questions about this? Yeah.
So what does the 1 over dx do to the problem?
Well, if you're interested in the change in f, then you wouldn't divide it by the dx. So a differential is some small, possibly approximate change. A derivative is a ratio of differentials, right? It's a measurement of sensitivity, right? In the volume and length partial derivative, we had 20. So that meant if I changed the length, the volume changed by 20 times as much. It's a measurement of sensitivity. If you graph it, it's a slope. Okay. So the business with the dx's canceling is a reason why, you know, sometimes people if they can see ahead of time how they're going to cancel, they skip writing the dx's at all, and they'll just write out the derivatives themselves. You know, they'll skip right to the 3x squared and the 2x and the negative 2x to the minus 3. Of course, if you actually need to estimate a change, then the differentials come back. Y partial. Okay? So it's going to be the same differentials, but this time I'm going to hold what variables constant? X and Z, the other variables. Y is the only variable now, the only input variable. X and Z are the constants now, so that's the principle of the partial derivative. Hold all the other inputs constant. Okay, so I'd have this differential, but now x and z are constants. So x cubed will be constant, and z to the minus 1 will be constant. So I can factor them out. Here's a negative z squared. I factor it out. And here, x is being held constant now in this new context. So this x to the minus 2 is also constant. Okay. So,
So that's the trick with the partial derivatives is you have to know your context, right? What are the other input variables, right? If you don't know that f is a function of these three variables, then you don't know what this partial derivative means. You have to know what the other inputs are so you know what else to hold constant. So again, you have to use a power rule. There's a 2y dy. This one's pretty simple. That's the only power rule you have to use there. These dy's will all cancel, so we'll just get x cubed times z to the minus 1 times that 2y plus x squared minus z squared. And then the last one is the z partial. That's our last input to consider. So we can now, new context, treat x and y, the other inputs, as constants. So now factor out an x cubed y squared from this differential. Let's see, x squared times y will now just be a constant. So this differential is just 0. Let's see, here, the negative y is a constant, so I can factor out a negative y. X to the minus 2, x is being held constant, so that's another 0. And I have to use a power rule for these two terms. Now this one, there's a negative 1 that you multiply by, and then you have negative 1 minus 1 here. That's why we have negative 2. And here we have, and there's a dz that's going to get canceled out. 2z dz altogether. We get negative x cubed y squared z to the negative 2 minus 2yz. That's how a general polynomial with a few negative exponents thrown in can look when you take the partial derivatives. The nice thing about this is there's no new rules, right? We're just using the same rules we had before. Power rule, constant multiple rule, sum rule. We just have more constants than before.
So
I'm not super interested in just finding partial derivatives of random functions. It's a good practice, but you know, in terms of not forgetting all the rules, but I'm more fundamentally interested in what does this all mean? So we have one interpretation of partial derivatives so far, right? This is our definition, right? Like for the volume one, right? There was a clear meaning to it. It was, you know, the ratio of differentials, so the derivative, right, with the other variables constant. Now there's another connection you can make, though. So we talked about with the box. I talked about making three changes: increasing the length by 0.1, increasing the width by 0.1, increasing the height by 0.1. And then we talked about how much that would change the volume. So what if you made all three of those changes? Well, the natural estimate for the changed volume would be, let's add up all three of the little increases. Okay? And in fact, we've done that sort of thing already with differentials. Okay? What the partial derivatives are doing is they're grouping the change terms. And here's how it looks. Okay. Very good. So the derivative or differential of the volume, dV, which is the differential of LWH, it's equal to, I claim, partial V, partial L, times dL, plus partial V, partial W, times dW, plus partial V, partial H, times dH. And this concept here of breaking up your differential into these terms, you know, the differential for each of the input variables times the partial derivative, this idea of grouping the terms is called the total differential. So this kind of expression. But it really is just the same as the regular old differential. Okay? I mean, this is not a new definition. I'm asserting it. Right? You know, this up here, you know, was a definition, right? Mm-hmm. This I claim you can prove it just using what we already know. Right? You just take the definition. So for example, here's a little proof. This is easy. Remember maybe this formula, the relative change formula, looks very pretty. Pleasing symmetry there. Okay, so now multiply both sides by LWH. And you get WHDL plus LHDW plus LWDH after you do all the canceling. Well, we figured out the partial derivatives already, right? Partial V partial L was WH. We already found that. We already found this one too.
this was partial B, partial W. And this was partial B, partial H.
So, in general, you have, you could imagine something of, you know, huge generality here. You could say something like, if you have a function of many variables, so many you don't want to use letters anymore, you want to use subscripts. The definition of the partial derivative just says, compute the derivative. And you hold all the other variables constant. So if you want to take the derivative with respect to the 17th input, you've got to hold the first 16 variables constant, and then you've got to hold variables 18, 19, 20, and so on constant if you want to get the 17th variable partial derivative. That's one here. And then two would say that if you have something like this, the differential of the function, if if this could be some very complicated formula perhaps. You might have to use a ton of rules to figure it out. But whatever it works out to be, you could group all of the terms like this. The first partial derivative, or I should say, the derivative, the partial derivative with respect to the first variable times the differential for the first variable plus the partial derivative with respect to the second variable times the differential for the second variable and so on until you get to your last variable. And so again, this would be your what you'd call a total differential. It's just a differential that you've grouped the terms in a nice way. So one way of interpreting all this is to say that for at least for the kinds of functions we think about, polynomials, exponentials, logarithms, square roots, when you have the different variables interact, how does that happen? It happens either by adding them, subtracting them, multiplying them, or dividing them. Or maybe you do something slightly fancier, like you have x to the power y. In all of those interactions, if you make small changes to each of the variables, to each of the input variables, it turns out that you get a good estimate of the change in the output by just treating each change separately, right? You pretend that you change x1 a little bit, multiply by that sensitivity or slope here to compute part of the change. Then you say, okay, now suppose I also change x2 a little bit. Then I compute this other slope. But the interesting thing about each of these slopes is each of these slopes is pretending all the other variables are constant. So what this says is that you can approximate a small change in all the inputs by separate small changes in the inputs. Just simply add them up. Very nice. So, yeah, I got that. So in some sense, I'm doing a little review when I talk about estimating change here.
another way of thinking about it. And we need this way of thinking about it because eventually we're going to do optimization problems where instead of just like find the price that maximizes profit, now we'll have more than one input and we'll have to find what do we set both of these inputs or what do we set all three of these inputs to in order to maximize profit or minimize cost or whatever we're trying to optimize. And so we really will need to think about this grouping, okay? So say you had, you know, two variables, say just x and y, right? What you have to do is look for points in two-dimensional space. So you look for an x and y coordinate where partial f partial x and equals 0 and partial f partial y equals 0 at the same time. Right? So it actually is worthwhile to group your differentials like this, because these partial derivatives have some value in their own right. Even if you really do want to consider not changing one variable at a time, you want to consider changing all the variables, it's thinking about the partial derivatives is still very helpful. Now, 6 minutes. Okay. So, tomorrow I'm going to talk more about total differentials. And we'll see how much time I need to spend on that. I believe... Yeah, depending on how fast we can go, you know, Sooner we'll be able to get to this optimization stuff. Okay. So, let's see here. Some homework. Give you some practice with this stuff. If you still have your old Business Map 1 textbook, it covers partial derivatives. I think it's chapter 15. It is after the chapter we did with the chapter corresponding to the integral stuff we did with. I think that was 14. I think it's in chapter 15. Okay. So 22. All right. This is not due right away, no. It's the older homework that's due next Tuesday. So you've got some time to think about it.
there's some functions, and you can probably guess what I want you to do. I want you to find partial derivatives. There's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 partial derivatives. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4 functions, so 4 total differentials. And next time we'll do some more problems with estimating changes. So we'll get some corresponding homework of that nature. Yes?
For the fourth one, is that minus 3 minus 5 or minus 7?
It's too short to be a 5, right? So it's an S. It's an S. Right? And this is an S too. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I'll be in my office after class as usual. Otherwise, see you Thursday.